Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the 12 Stocks for the 12 Days of Christmas 5 Gold Rings Special. I'm Phil Carroll.
I'm Kevin Hornsby.
So it's that time of year again, Kev. Happy New Year. You had a good Christmas?
Yeah, Happy New Year to you all. And yeah, no, I've had a great Christmas once. Haven't really been doing anything exciting, but because we're finishing off our apartment now to move in. And the last, five, 6 days have been on the north coast here in the Mediterranean coast. Weather's been very nice, 21, 22 degrees. Only dived in the sea once, and it was Baltic. but it was nice. It was nice and refreshing. But
don't get me on the weather down. Honestly, since October, it feels like it's been a storm. We've had Storm Garrett. We've had Storm Henk. We've had like 90 miles an hour winds. It's been rainy. I've never known a more depressing sort of just miserable wet. I don't mind cold weather if it's like blue skies and you get out, get wrapped up. But literally, it has been the most depressing, wet, miserable weather. Yeah, never really known anything quite like it, to be honest.
You have to put the big sunshine screen on your Peloton. And
honestly, I've been doing like the sort of like Italian rides where you get the video of, you know, riding around Italy or in Iceland and different cities where it's sunny, and it has been nice. So there is a few little things on the app which you can do just to make, you know, pretend you're somewhere else. But yeah, it's today's best day we've had for in a while. I think the weekend's going to brighten up. But yeah, unbelievable depressing weather, and it kind of gets
to focus yourself on maybe 6-7 weeks time we'll be in Namibia, and hopefully the weather will be a bit better in the southern hemisphere.
So let's go through the five gold rings, and what, you know, give us a bit of a criteria that a stock needs to fulfill to be, these are the kind of ones that didn't make the 12 stocks list, but potentially, you know, there's a big growth potential, maybe nano cap, off the radar, growth stocks, maybe a little bit misunderstood. Do you want to just elaborate a bit?
Yeah, I think all of the things that you've said is right. They were on the shortlist for the 12 stocks, nearly all of them, and they didn't make the 12 stocks because we were basically saying, no, there was risks involved with them because maybe only one asset, or we didn't think that they would perform as well as others. And some of them weren't on those 12 stock lists because they're basically high risk reward shares. So that's why we've chosen these five that we're about to do last year. And if we go back a year, the five gold rings last year didn't perform very well because we were totally risk off. You know, the whole market was risk off. They didn't perform well. If you are changing from fear to risk, then these are ones to look out for. I think there's a good possibility that these will do extremely well in a risk scenario. At the same time, they might not. So, you know, bear that in mind.
Yeah, and always do your own research, as we say. So starting then with, and I guess this is quite, first on the list, First Class Metals, FCM is the ticker. Do you want to just go through, start from the beginning, where they are, the jurisdiction, et cetera, and a little bit about the company?
Yeah, well, First Class Metals nearly did make it in 12 stocks. We can openly say that. And that's why we had to make them one of the five gold rings. They're based in Ontario. All their assets are on Ontario. I think the best way that I've been racking my brain to describe this is first curve mover. Okay. So in other words, if you look at the Lassonde curve, they are in the start of this Lassonde curve. They are basically getting exploration targets up to drill ready points, maybe small drill program, and then forwarding that project onto somebody else, either for cash or to still be part of it on a net smelter basis or whatever. So this is the type of company that is. They have 4/5 projects in Ontario, and everything is in that Canadian jurisdiction, which in my view is very good. They were, I think, high 16, 17, 18p at one point last year. And a big seller came in for various reasons, I think, which were not anything to do with, First Class Metals. That's really stymied the price. They've raised money at 6p recently, and I think as we speak it's 6.2p. I think there's a lot of upside in this. The main project, and I'll let you talk about it really, I think the one that they've drilled and we're now waiting for the assay results is zigzag.
Yeah. Yeah, so there was a really good shareholder letter. I don't know if you saw it. It came out just at the back end of last year, December, from James and Mark. And basically, it just went through some of the key milestones that they achieved in 2023. They successfully obtained 5 exploration permits and established exploration agreements or MOUs with the 4 First Nations groups. And as you alluded to then they focused on understanding the geology of the primary properties, which include the Zigzag, which is their main kind of lithium asset, ESA, North Hemlo and Sunbeam. And then obviously, as I just alluded to, the recent drilling campaign on the Zigzag lithium property showed promising results. So that was really good to see. And Mark did a fantastic presentation sort of on site, didn't he, where he went through some of the cores. I think he went through those with Stockbox with Mark Fairburn. Challenging market conditions, they also secured funding, as you just alluded to. That was twice in 2023, which is obviously testament to the quality of the properties and the confidence of the investors. And then looking ahead into 2024, they're well positioned for another year of high activity with 6 permitted properties, including 4 that are now in that drill ready state. So it's a strong foundation for continued growth. Yeah, all looks very promising, and the assets that they have there, certainly do look promising from what we've seen.
Yeah, and I mean, as Zigzag, they've obviously done the drilling, and they're waiting for the results. It's not a huge amount of drilling, but there's no doubt that there is pegmatites and that they've gone through from the cores. Mark Sale seems to know exactly what he's talking about when it comes to basically moving these companies up that Lassonde curve. And that basically is the aim of this company. They're not looking to take an asset from exploration to mining. They're looking to take it up the first stage of the Lassonde curve and then sell it on. Now, if the results in Zigzag are good, my expectations is they're going to have a queue of people looking to purchase Zigzag off them, either in all or in large part. And that's going to give them a hell of a good cash injection. And that will then allow them then to focus and bring the other 3/4 projects up and start to go back the other way to find more projects that they can then take up that curve.
Yeah.
And I think because it's a small team, their communication has been excellent to the market. They've been able to communicate very well, both James and Mark. And for those reasons alone, I think that it's got a good chance of regaining the value that it had previously, I think. You know, it's basically not moved since its IPO, really.
Well, it's moved down, hasn't it, really, is what it's done.
Yeah.
What do you think the market is missing? Do you think that market doesn't maybe get, I think James alluded to it in that sort of shareholder letter, that they, as you just said, that they're taking these projects from, they identify the properties with the potential, move it up the value curve or the Lassonde curve, and then he referred to it as a project incubator in there, which makes sense. But do you think it's a case of do some drilling, like the spodumene was visible in all the 9 intersections in Zigzag, maybe get a suitor for that and then move on to the next one? Is that the sort of idea?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the idea of the company. And I think people have missed that. You know, it's first curve mover, as I said again, first curve mover. They're not going past that first curve. They want to get the first curve and then add value to the asset and then get it off the books either completely or with possibly net smelter royalties on the back end or some sort of profit that's available. Maybe they don't even do that for the first few because effectively they just want to get more cash to move the other ones forward and to get new projects. So yeah, as again, first class metals, first curve mover.
Yeah, so as you remember, we caught up with James and Mark at the Resourcing Tomorrow conference in November, and this is what they had to say about the Zigzag lithium prospect.
So we're excited to be here with Mark Sale and James Knowles of First Class Metal. Welcome, gents.
Nice to be here with you, Phil.
Yeah, nice to see you, Phil.
Very good. So we're currently staring at this nice rock of spodumene. It's quite a fine example. Obviously, I'm not a geologist, but it looks pretty special to me. Do you want to just talk us through what we're looking at, Mark, please?
Yeah, it's a pegmatite, which is rich in spodumene, which is one of the main minerals that hosts lithium oxide. I mean, pure spodumene has up to 6% lithium oxide in it. Our best sample is shy of that, but we recently put out a press release and we had a 5.5 meter cut channel sample that went 2.4% lithium oxide, including one section of it which went 2.5 meters at over 3% lithium oxide. So, and I rang the guys and said, guys, why was it only 5.5 meters long? And you've got to remember, they were hand stripping it. They were pulling back the vegetation. And they said, Mark, the tree roots just got too big after 5.5 meters. So I think the takeaway point from that is that it's open. And now we've got it permitted. We can get in there with an excavator and rip off the surface vegetation and the small trees and get some real long samples and join up. I mean, so far the outcrops are like little islands in our archipelago, but when we're doing the stripping, we will be able to get more continuity from it. But in the meantime, I think the stripping might have to wait till spring, and there might be another way of assessing the viability of the outcrops in more than one dimension.
So tell us just a little bit about this rock again. You've got, as you said, spodumene.
Yes.
If we just took the spodumene from this, how much lithium is in the spodumene? What percentage normally is associated with this?
Well, this is quite fresh, so it could be up to 6%. I mean, if you look at the chemical formula for spodumene, it could have 6. I think an absolute maximum might be just shy of 8% lithium in it. And a lot of the places that are mining hard rock lithium, they're doing what's called benefaction. Is that they are taking out more of the spodumene and leaving the feldspar behind, so it's a more transportable commodity. And there is actually a processing plant being constructed only 10 kilometres away from our Zigzag project.
And this thing doesn't sort of come in sort of strikes, does it? How does it normally geologically appear?
A pegmatite is a little bit, shall we say, like a quartz vein, in that you have a fracture in the Earth's surface and this fluid that forms a pegmatite enters into that structure. But of course these structures aren't always binary, homogeneous. They can be twisted and some openings might be wider than others. If you imagine you put an axe into a block of wood, it's not a straight cut like if you were cutting butter with a knife. The opening that the axe produces is twisty and it's wider in places and it goes off a bit here around a harder piece. So that's what pegmatites are. But then you've got to remember also that subsequent to that emplacement, you might have had other crustal activity which has caused them to be faulting. And in some instances, of course, you can have secondary pulses, which is why you might find that within a pegmatite there is metal zonation. What certain areas might be richer in spodumene and lithium than other areas. But what's also exciting us about the Zigzag pegmatite is it's also got tantalum in it, it's got rubidium in it, and it's got gallium in it. So it's not just the lithium, there's some credits, as they would call them.
So you've got this hard rock lithium is in serious demand in the world at this moment in time. So you've got to be having guys knocking on your door basically saying, we'd like a piece of this action, surely.
I think it's fair to say this rock we've got here has been the star of the show, really.
Yeah.
The amount of industry interest we've had from the client bookings we had on this Zigzag project itself has been immense, but the number of guys, geologists for big companies and so forth, have just been walking past and they've been dragging their associates around to actually look at this piece, and it's certainly creating some interest. Yeah, you don't get a nicer looking piece of spodumene than that, and
no,
yeah, I'm very happy.
So, in this company, this is going to be the major event over the next period of time. As you progress this, as you drill it, as you take more samples, you know, you're going to prove something up, I presume, from this.
There's no secret that we did a recent fundraise, and one of the motivations of that fundraise, or the justification it was a modest drill program on the Zigzag project. And I've been saying all this field season that we wanted to bring certain projects to drill-ready status with the intention of drilling one of them this season. The thing about Zigzag is that it's a 7-kilometre access, and there's a couple of little soft places along the access. I was up there last week, it was minus 14, and they're starting to go quite hard now. So it's becoming drill-ready in a different facet, shall we say.
Indeed. And as you drill and get more results from this, you're going to get more and more interest. Someone's going to want a JV with you, I'm sure, and
this is going to be a major event for the company.
Absolutely. And as James said, people have been cold calling us already saying, how much do you want? Can we joint venture it? But what I've said, I mean, from my grey hair, you can tell I've been in exploration a while.
Yeah.
What I've said to James is we need to value add by drilling. We don't need to go crazy with the drilling, but we've got to give it that third dimension. There was some drilling historically, but only four short drill holes. But we want to do drilling along the area where we did the channel sampling. I mean, it's been mapped over 800 metres long, and we did channel samples only over 200 metres of it. We've got grab samples of plus 1% lithium oxide over 400 metres. So we will be drilling just a small snapshot of the potential, but it will underpin and validate the potential we believe is there. And of course, open the door for further drilling by us or a joint venture partner.
Sounds very exciting. Thanks very much for your time, gents.
No, thanks.
Cheers,
for
guys.
Thanks.
Bye.
Okay, good. Let's move on to the next one. So this is an interesting one, and we're trying not to just have all mining or resource sector stocks in there. And this is one that was brought onto our attention probably the back end of last year. Companies called Incanthera PLC, INC is the ticker, and they're listed on AQUIS. And they're all about dermatology and oncology. It's a spin out from the Institute of Cancer Therapeutics, hence the name Incanthera. It's an acronym or sort of an amalgamation of Institute Cancer Therapeutics from the University of Bradford in 2010. And as I alluded to, they're listed on AQUIS in 2020. Basically, what are they doing? Well, they are a specialist company in dermatology and oncology, as I just mentioned. They secured a commercial deal for their luxury skincare brand, which is Skin Plus Cell, which actually have 3D samples here that were sent out by the company. B-Body, Bioactive Skincare. There's a face cream as well, which is labeled as Bioactive Vitamin Plus Silk Proteins. And then there's also a hand cream. I've tried them, not the face stuff, but the hand cream, and it's nice. It feels like a premium product. And basically, they've got a deal for this brand, this Skin Plus Cell, with Marionaud, and they're Marionaud are part of the A.S. Watson Group, who are the world's largest international health, beauty, and lifestyle brand retailer, who operate in over 16,100 stores across 28 markets, serving 5.3 billion customers. And this partnership provides Incanthera with a robust market presence and access to a vast customer base. So it looks like they're kind of close to revenue and profitability in 2024 and beyond. And obviously, this is the first of the commercial deals that we're expecting, which is obviously all going to open up those revenue streams and growth opportunities for the company. They have contracted Frika Cosmetic AG, which is Switzerland's leading skincare contract manufacturer with over 70 years of experience, and they're going to handle the manufacturing, quality control, and packaging of the Skin Plus Cell products, and then get them rolled out into the Swiss market effectively. So I don't know what your thoughts are on it, but it certainly looks very interesting. They raised £1 million through an oversubscribed institutional-led subscription, and sort of at the back end of last year. So there's a lot of confidence in the company's prospects, and that the funds will obviously support the initial manufacturing and working capital for that aforementioned deal. What do you make of it?
Well, I think, yeah, if this company was well known and probably not on AQUIS, it'd be worth a hell of a lot more already, I think. I mean, they raised at 7p, it's currently, I think, 6.5p or thereabouts. So you can get in under the raise price as we speak. Just to put a picture on it, these products are, you know, premium products. They're £100 a piece, I think, or thereabouts, or €100. The markup on them is huge, as in probably, I think, 80% or more. Yes, this whole thing is to prevent skin cancer. Now, obviously, these are the first lot of products, but I think the real blue sky with this is the potential for pharma and the fact that, you know, this could help prevent skin cancer in people. So I think if it catches on, This could be extremely profitable for this company. You know, I don't know what the market cap is at the minute. Have you an idea?
Market cap's just sub 5 million. It's like 4.8 million at the 6.5p price that it is currently. Yeah, so it's sub 5 million.
And we spoke with the CEO, and hopefully we will speak with him again next year or this year at some point. And, you know, his take on it is that they are going to do profit and revenue of many multiples of their current market cap in 2024. Now, I can only take them on firsthand on that, on how many they think they're going to sell and stuff like this. And obviously, it's not probably going to be first half of the year loaded. It's going to be second half of the year loaded by the time it's produced and sold and all the rest of the revenues achieved. But there's a second part to this company, and I think one of the reasons why we chose it, and that is the blue sky pharma view, that this could be also a cure, stroke, an ability to help people with skin cancer.
Yeah, I think it's the way it's delivered, isn't it? That they have some technology that delivers this bioactive vitamin. It's like a B3 and it gets it deep into the skin, whereas normally you take something orally, this vitamin, into the skin to help basically repair cells, etc. And I think an independent proof of principle studies that demonstrated that the delivery exceeds of that used orally in successful clinical trials with formulation proven as safe as baby skincare products. So from the testing they've done, it appears this product has the ability to really get deep, penetrate through the dermatological layers of the skin and get into the cells there. So, and again, we'll get Simon on, Dr. Simon on to talk more about how the product works, as say, because he effectively spun it out from the university, didn't he? And, you know, he's the founder of the company, founder of Incantera, as I alluded to, from this Institute of Cancer Therapeutics from Bradford University in 2010. So I think it will be very, very useful to get Dr. Simon on to talk in future podcasts.
Yeah, and I think he's got plenty of skin in the game, and there's little or no debt
in the company.
Yeah, and there's little or no debt in the company as well. So I think it's got great potential. If this product sells, basically, is what you're basing the scenario on.
Yeah.
And the fact is, with this distribution model and this distribution company, which is world famous for distributing these products, then I don't really see how it's going to fail. It could succeed incredibly, and it could do very well, because they've had no sales to this point. So to demand a 500 million or 5 million pound market cap is not going to be huge numbers of sales. So we think it's got really good potential to have a great upside. We talked to them also about being on Aquis, and their intention is that they will move to AIM or the main market within a period of time. So again, that would be a box ticked from our point of view, that we liked it because, you know, they realized maybe that's not the market to be on, but it could do very well.
Good. Okay. So, well, let's have a look at Energy Pathways, EPP. So that was obviously formerly Dial Square Investments. And this is obviously a newcomer to the market in the form of that, as I just mentioned, the reverse takeover of the formerly listed Dial Square Investments. Do you want to just go through what piqued your interest in Energy Pathways and what it is exactly that they do?
Well, what piqued my interest was probably post value to the company of £100 million over a fairly short period of time. Now, to go back a few steps, basically, this is a gas production company. It's not exploration in any way, shape, or form. The gas is there. It's in the Irish Sea.
It's ready to go, as they say.
Yeah, it's not even drill ready. It's ready. It's been proven. It was too small for the majors, so they didn't bother. The first scenario is that they will produce gas over a five-year period. I suppose the downside is they're going to need some funding to get the thing up and going. But once that funding has been achieved, then you're talking about, considering it's a market cap of, what, £6 million, probably a bit less even at the minute, because it's going, I think, about 3.7p or so at the minute, then you are in a situation where when and if this gas comes out the ground, you're going to have 20 to 25 times the market cap as revenues coming out the ground. Now, obviously, that isn't all profit, and there's going to be some costs to actually get it going. There are multiple different situations, exactly the same as this first one. So in other words, it's sort of do and repeat, do and repeat, do and repeat, do and repeat. And effectively, then you could have huge amounts of income, revenue coming online each year as this progresses. So we think this has got like really big upside.
Entra.
I think this stems from, you know, you see all these people, you hear them saying there's no way, you know, we need to move away from fossil fuels. But the reality is there is no real short-term solution to replacing them, is it, right now at the moment? There's absolutely, and even the government have put out a statement, didn't they, in March of last year, basically saying we remain absolutely committed to maximising the vital production of UK oil and gas. The UK's energy security remains hugely dependent on a reliable, resilient and affordable supply of gas. We need to support maximising the production of UK gas and minimise our reliance on overseas imports. Over-reliance on overseas LNG imports is less secure and significantly more carbon intensive from a global perspective compared to UK gas having on average, double the emissions intensity. So that's a statement, praise indeed. HM government made that statement, as I say. And yeah, so just to go back, so this is, as you mentioned, is Irish Sea, UK Irish Sea, ready to go gas development. Basically, their initial focus is on the Marram gas field just off Morecambe, and they've got 46 billion cubic feet of gas resource that's fully appraised. Okay, it's low cost development in shallow water, so it's very, very easy to get to. High value project, as you alluded to earlier, there's around 100 million net present value, greater than 70% ROR, and less than 12 months payback on that. So early gas supply and cash flow to deliver shareholder returns and growth. And it just looks very, very good, doesn't it? The fact that you can get in and get it pretty much out to market. Slight problem with fund, not problem with funding, but they've got to get over that hurdle, haven't they? So whether that be debt funded or equity, I don't know how they're going to do that, but ultimately let's see how that plays out.
Yeah, I think it's likely to be a combination of them both, you know, equity and debt. Certainly not going to be all equity. If it was all equity, then why would you even consider doing it? So I think it's got to be a balance of the two. I suppose there is a real opportunity to get in here, I think, because there are existing shareholders in Dial Square, is it, that are probably looking to get out. IPO was at 4p. I think you can buy under that as we speak. So I think anything sort of between 4 and 8p is going to be a good deal here, because this could really
looking at the deck earlier on, pulled out, there was one interesting point on the investor presentation. You can look at that on the energypathways.uk website, and I think they're saying some like 85% or greater than 85% of the existing shares are locked in. I think there's a firm lock in on 71%, and there's an orderly market on around agreement on around 14%. So it does look like the shares are held quite tightly within the form of lock ins, etc.
Yeah, so I mean a 15% market of the market cap is available. So if we talk 6 million, that's £900,000 worth of shares that are floating and in free hands. So if that is strictly true, then you know it's not going to take a huge amount of buying to this to go very, very quickly higher, basically on the basis that the project is proven, the gas is there, we're going to get the gas out of the ground. Does the UK need gas? I think so. You know, it desperately needs its own gas. It's much more climate friendly for us to take our own gas than import it LNG. And one of the reasons why we're picking this is because it's a UK company in UK shores.
43% of our energy comes from gas, and 85% of homes are heated from gas still. So it's absolutely necessity.
Yeah, necessity, and it's UK. So, you know, back our own companies and back our own backyard of where we need the gas from. I mean, surely after the whole Russian debacle, we should really realise that we need our own gas.
Absolutely.
And this company, I think, is, you know, this is just the project to get it going. And then once that happens, as I said, there are multiple other options that they can take in the same area that would allow them to tie into different gas pipelines in that Irish Sea and continue to pump gas and pump money, basically, which is what they're going to be hopefully doing.
We had a good chat with just before New Year, didn't we, with the board. There was Ben Klube, CEO, and then we spoke to Mark Steves, chairman, and they've got a very impressive CV in terms, you know, like Ben was vice president and finance BHP Petroleum, CEO of Energy Capture, and then you've also got Peter Nichols as a geoscience manager, and he was exploration manager at BHP and FAR, etc. So that, you know, a few of them Derek Grimmer, BP, Shell, BG Group, 25 years experience in gas. So it brought together a big team of management and directors there to help with this this company.
Yeah, and I think we're very positive that 2024 will be very good, and possibly 2025 will be even better. But the scenario is that I think you've got a chance to get in at the basement here and see what happens. Okay, so the only one that actually made the same list, Five Gold Rings, from last year, even though its performance was pretty damn miserable last year, in 2023, is Extract Resources. Now, why? Twofold, I think. One, it's been massively beaten down. It's gone down from 4, 5, 6p all the way down to a penny, where we're basically recommending a penny, even though in the first few days of January, obviously, it's done well, but we've chosen these last year before that even happened. And why are we so optimistic? Well, one, the Mozambique gold, okay, and the fact that it's basically funding itself now and it has an opportunity there to fund other projects. And two, the licenses that Colin Bird managed to secure in northwest Zambia. These licenses are adjacent to the licenses from African Pioneer, which we chose in our 12 stocks because they're further on, because First Quantum are actually drilling those assets. And if those assets come in, the value of Extract licenses in northwest Zambia are going to, well, maybe not skyrocket, but they're certainly going to be very prospective. And there will be a great understanding, I think, if the trend follows that way, then it should go into the Extract licenses. So we have a company with a valuation of £8.5 million at 1p a share. And, you know, the scenario is that the gold, in my view, and the gold production is worth significantly more than that current market cap. What do you think, Phil?
Yeah, absolutely. I was just looking back at some of the numbers. I mean, I think the first half of the year of last year, Fairbride operation progressed in every aspect that they wanted in terms of reporting, etc. And the numbers, I mean, what do you make of the numbers? I think they were around the month-on-month gold production increase from like 35 kilograms in December of 2022, so the last quarter of the previous year, to something like 83 kilograms in July, which was like Q3 2023 that was reported by the operator. And then for the other projects at Manica, they were around the 12.3 kilograms. And then the average gold sales prices, I think, were about 1963. Obviously, that doesn't take into account the fact that gold rose to all-time highs of around the 2,100 mark at the back end of last year. So I think the gold alone is probably, the Fairbride deposit, Mozambique, is probably worth not far off the cap, around that 8.5 million mark, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd suggest it's worth more than that. I mean, obviously, I think their share is 23%. So 23% of a project producing, what is it? Let's say 1,000 kilograms a year. If it's, around the 80 kilogram a month basis, 1,000 kilograms a year at 2,000 per ounce is a hell of a lot of cash. Need to do the sums, but you can do the sums yourself. And then any sort of PE valuation against that will put a much more robust valuation, I believe, on than 8.5 million. And, you've got potential upside there, because gold is looking very positive in terms of the way forward. And copper also. So I think this is one of these that we kept in because we still think it's an incredible blue sky situation. If Extract, the opportunity to drill those northwest Zambian assets themselves and continue to find what we hope is going to be found in Askham Pioneer, then the valuation could be phenomenal.
I think that the negatives, obviously, from it that hit the market and hit the share price, you alluded to, is the announcement, was it back end of things like October, as the Bushranger pit optimization study, wasn't it, that came out, and it said that the Bushranger study basically concluded that due to the large size and relatively low grade of the Racecourse deposit, conditions are expected to be excellent for efficient and productive mining. The current Ascot mineral resource is not of sufficient size or close enough to surface to warrant mining. And that was obviously enough to just put a back burner on the you know, the basically the assets there, wasn't it, for a time being? I mean, do you think also the drop back in the copper price has also made it, let's say, not economically viable right now?
It's possible, but for me, the reason why Extract has done so badly in the last year is because the Bushranger dream died.
Yeah.
And it died long before it was agreed in October that it had died. And a lot of people got, you know, burnt from that situation. And, you know, we've taken a lot of stick about that as well, because it's obviously ourselves that is having the interviews with Colin, who ultimately was very bullish on it. And we were very bullish on it from what he was saying to us, that there was going to be enough copper there. But it seems that the copper amount was not necessarily the big issue. The big issue was the grade, that the grade wasn't high enough in terms of the overall to get it out the ground at the minute.
Yeah.
Now, if that is the case, if we see 12,000 copper, if we see 13,000 copper, if we see 14,000 copper, if we see 15,000 copper, does that mean all of a sudden Extract rises from the, you know, phoenix from the flames, from the copper flames, literally, and all of a sudden Bushranger becomes a project? I don't know. I don't know, but it's not dead. It is not dead and buried. But the reason why we stuck with Extract was simply because of the Zambian assets that have been acquired by Extract and Colin Bird next to Aston Pioneer's assets, which First Quantum are drilling. Now, if they come in good, as in Aston Pioneer gets a result, then all of a sudden Extract is in play for this copper. And we know there's copper in Zambia. It's maybe hard for everybody to understand, but literally Zambia may be made of copper, literally, in terms of the whole country. It's like full of copper.
Well, we've seen the Mafani mine reopen, well, you know, being bought 51% interest in it from the IRH group, which was a great announcement for something like $1.7 billion or something ridiculous like that. That was the back end of last year. But as you say, those two licenses that they acquired in August of last year that was announced, they're situated within the Western Foreland, which are in the geological district that hosts that potential Kamoa-style mineralization, Kawezi-style mineralization, which comes through from the Congo. And I think we've said it before that these borders are man-made. You know, they just put a fence up effectively, saying and a passport control office, you know, border control. It's a man-made area. It's not going to just suddenly stop at the border, is it? So I'm not going to continue into Zambia.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the guerrillas knew that as well, didn't they? And the guerrillas knew if they were in the Congo, they'd probably get shot. If they were in Rwanda or what was the other country, Uganda, then they're probably going to be safe. And hence the reason why there's more than that. But yes, anyway, I digress. Anyway, so Extract, we believe, has great potential. It's had a good start to the new year as well. And let's see where it ends up. And finally...
Yeah, so this one is obviously a newcomer to the list, and this is Firing Strategic Minerals, and their main, I mean, there's a couple of things, isn't there, within their kind of portfolio. They're not just a one-trick pony, but the first one we'll talk about is this. It's an ex-Glencore limestone project in Zambia. While we're still on the subject of Zambia, that segues nicely into this one. So, commission-ready project, the limestone project commission-ready, meaning it's well-prepared for immediate production. Requires the time to market and minimizes or reduces the time to market and minimizes the risks associated with project development. It's all about quicklime production. So quicklime potential to produce between 500 and 600 tons of quicklime per day. Multiple uses if you don't know quicklime, but including being an essential reagent widely used during the flotation of copper sulfide minerals. So where could you see use for flotation of copper sulfide minerals in Zambia?
Everywhere.
Absolutely.
Everywhere that has copper, which is everywhere.
You'd be able to literally sell this from that the plant, this excellent Glencore project plant, limestone plant, into the Zambian market directly.
I think there isn't any doubt that there would be a situation where a huge amount of this will be taken up in Zambia itself and the other countries in and around it,
yeah.
Whether it be Congo, Zambia, Zimbabwe.
All over, isn't it? I mean,
Rwanda as well, you know. Yeah. So all of those countries, Uganda. The scenario with this is that, as you said, Glencore took this so far, then pulled out of Zambia. So now they've spent, I think it's $80 million or maybe a bit more. They spent $80 million on this project. They're now basically saying it's yours for a few million, I think it is. And, you know, it's got the potential to produce, you know, a huge amount of cash, you know, kick off huge amounts of cash as it starts to go. And that's going to basically change firing strategic situation in the next 12 months. And that's basically why we've chosen it.
Yeah, that's one. And the other asset is in the Côte d'Ivoire. Yeah, so they basically, in the back end of October, they commenced part two of phase two, 5,000 metres of auger drilling campaign at X, with 3,000 metres of RC drilling campaign planning well advanced. And that was on the flagship ATEX lithium tantalum project in Côte d'Ivoire, or the Ivory Coast. The campaign will target three new pegmatite zones that were identified during the soil sampling campaign. I think they're looking at a total of 840 holes, so there's going to be circa 5,000 metres of drilling, three new pegmatite zones targeted, final hole locations for 3,000 metres of RC drilling identified. So that one looks good. Very hot topic at the moment, obviously, lithium tantalum project. And I think they potentially will have some results come in next or this year for that project. So keep an eye out for that one. So yeah, JV with Rika Resources on the ATEX lithium tantalum project.
Yeah, and we've got a market capitalization of 4.3 million. It's not a huge amount. You know, in the last sort of year, it's dropped from over 9p down to 4.2p. But this is a game changer. I think one of the reasons why we've chosen it, I think it's because this Lime project, L-Y-M-E, not L-I-M-E, is going to be, you know, just shooting off cash. There's lots of need for it. It's required in country and out of country, and I think should do very, very well.
And whilst we're at the Mines and Money Resourcing Tomorrow conference in London, we also met up with Vasilios Karelis, the independent non-executive director of Firing Strategic Minerals, and this is what he had to say.
Okay, we're delighted to be joined by Vasilios Karelis, non-executive director of Firing Resources. Do you want to talk us through some of the assets, please, Vasilios?
Yeah, sure. Firing started off with a lithium project here in Côte d'Ivoire, where we've carried out some drilling last year. We've got some significant intersections, have entered into a JV with Rika Resources, who are going to be funding the project to the tune of $18.6 million to earn to 50% of the project, taking that through to DFS. We're about to commence with the second round of drilling in the beginning of next year. And, you know, we've defined pegmatites within our license area now that are striking over 5 kilometres. And it looks like potentially there could be a lot more. So, you know, still early days, but it's an encouraging start.
Very good. So, I mean, this hard rock lithium, I've banged on about it with a few people even today. But the hard rock lithium really is in demand. And are you finding that the joint venture is being productive for you?
It is, yeah, for sure. The team behind Rika, who are our joint venture partner, are the same team that are basically behind Atlantic Lithium. So they bring a wealth of expertise to lithium space. And when you see that the technical people are getting excited and want to work on your project, you know
geologists
that...
Geologists getting excited,
well, that doesn't happen often.
So that's right. So when the guys are really keen to work on your project, it sends the right signals, right? And that's why we're quite excited about the next drill campaign.
Okay, and what other projects or cash generative things do you think are available within the company?
Yeah, we've recently signed an option to acquire an interest in a lithium lime plant in Zambia. It's a plant that's, it's an ex-Glencore plant, which they operated briefly for a few months before they pulled out of country. It's fully permitted, it's been constructed, it's got a resource. We've basically started the first phase of getting the crushing section optimized, which we have just completed. That's fairly operational now, and we're now in the process of converting the kilns and then beginning to commission those kilns. So it's a $100 million investment by Glencore for a project which we're basically getting in at a valuation of about $17 million.
Wow. And for all those listening, it's not lemon and lime, it's lime. So what is the purpose of the lime? Why does Zambia need lime?
Well, Glencore would have constructed the lime plant for their process, their mines up in Zambia at the time. So lime is a critical constituent or additive which they put into the flotation circuits, which primarily uses a flotation agent, but also used as a settling agent, as well as for controlling the pH of the float. In addition, interestingly, lime is also used in the processing of lithium brines, and so it's critical for they use that to precipitate the magnesium out of the lithium brines to sort of purify that as well. And then there's higher spec products of that, that go into the fertilizer industry and other industries as well. So, I mean, the numbers, you know, the numbers are provisional, but, you know, we're still working on them and doing the technical work. But it looks like this could have be producing, you know, generate free cash flow around about $10 to $15 million a year once in full production.
Very good. And the fertilizer side of things, do you need to upgrade the lime in any way to start using it in that way?
Yeah, I mean, look, that to be honest is a space we haven't really looked at yet. I mean, at the moment, you know, interestingly enough, Glencore have sort of whispered to us that they would like to get an offtake for their projects in the DRC. So, you know, there's actually a lot of demand within country. There's a nickel mine not too far away. There's other operators in the area that are interested in taking up the products. At the moment, the focus is purely for the mines. But, once we're fully operational, then we definitely look to see if we can, you know, produce
it. So the product is used for all metals. It's not necessarily copper. It can be nickel. It can be...
It's used on gold mines. It's where you need pH control. So, you know, lime is basically, you know, controls the acidity. So on gold mines, for example, if you don't control the pH, those tanks that have got the cyanide in, if they get too acidic, the cyanide turns into gas.
So, you don't want that.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to be smelling it. Because if you smell it,
we've seen it in operation at Zambia at some of the concentrators at Rowan, etc. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, so it's a commercial product that's used throughout the industry. And I mean, if you look at some of the deals that have been done recently, I mean, this week I think Sigma Rock announced that reverse takeover, $1.2 billion of aggregate and lime business. In, you know, a whole lot of licenses and projects in Europe. Sir McDavis has Blue Alpha Ventures. They've recently invested in, not even constructed yet, and probably similar capacity to what we have, project in Papua New Guinea. And they've, I think it's $40 million for a 50% interest in that. So
this is going to be a game changer in terms of creating revenue for the company.
It's quite opportunistic. It's something which, you know, it came to us in a roundabout way, and, you know, the more we look at it, the more we're beginning to like it.
Mm. Very good. Yeah, I'm starting to like these mining companies that have the ability to have some revenue while they explore another asset. The one where we visited Rwanda is similar. They're going to have trading arm and try and create £1 to £2 million a year, and then subsequently be able to help fund the other project, which is also lithium as well. So that's Aterion. But yeah, I really like this because I really think it de-risks the company completely. If you have another source of income from something that's already producing. So
yeah, the last thing is debt free.
Very good. Vasilios, we'll say thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
Good. Should we wrap things up then?
Yeah, I mean, good luck with any of those choices. I would openly say to you that any of those five choices have got good chance of doing well. Do not put your crown jewels on any of them, because as far as we're concerned, they're the best of what we see around in terms of opportunities, and they've got catalysts that, if not, have already happened. But, you know, don't be investing tons and tons of money in each one.
Yeah, and have a look at them and do some research into them, and I'm sure you'll see them. They quite often appear at the mining company. We actually saw Firing, didn't we, at the and obviously First Class Metals as well, at the investor show in November at the back end of last year at the Mines and Money Resourcing Tomorrow convention. So it's quite good for investors if you listen to these podcasts and you want to potentially meet the companies and speak to the CEOs firsthand, then it's always worth attending these conferences, isn't it? Or any evenings that they organise. Quite often Proactive have these evenings in London where you can go and watch, listen to see presentations. There was one at the Colt Brasserie at St. Paul's that I attended back end of last year, where I met Mark Sale from First Class Metals. Darren Hazelwood was there from Panther, and also Ryan was there from Fulcrum Metal. So quite often a lot of these companies do these investor evenings where you can meet the companies. And I'd urge people this year to kind of try and do more of that networking, where you actually can speak to the CEOs and make an informed decision based on talking to them, you know, and getting a feel for them and what they think of the company, and just asking any questions you might have to them.
Yeah, I will publicize this because I just think it's worth publicizizing. It's the UK's largest event for private investors, which is the Master Investor Show, at the same place as we went to for the other show that Phil just mentioned.
Business Design Centre, on it in London.
Business Design Centre in London. And I think it costs £25 to go. But if you're in and around London on Saturday, I think it's Saturday the 9th of March, is it? You'd need to have a look at it yourself just to confirm. But it's well worth it. There's supposed to be 100 different companies there and all sorts of other things as well in terms of people that can assist or information that you can gather. And yes, you should be able to talk directly with many of the CEOs. So yeah, I think that is something worth contemplating and worth going. And all I can say is we look forward to 2024. Seems to be much more optimistic than it was previously. We haven't got off to a flyer, but certainly some of the stocks have gone reasonably well, which has been good. And yeah, good luck in your choices and your decisions.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.